The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Get a Casper mattress and start your year off right. Try it in your home for 100 nights risk-free. Go to casper.com/Glenn. $50 off the purchase of your mattress. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Former vice chairman and head of development at General Motors, Bob Lutz, wrote an article, Kiss the Good Times Goodbye. He says the end state will be a fully autonomous module with no capability for the driver to exercise command. You'll call for it. It'll arrive at your location. You get in, input your destination, and go on the freeway. On the freeway, it will merge seamlessly into a stream of other modules traveling at 120 to 150 miles an hour. Bob, why is the average person hearing this kind of stuff and they're not keeping up with technology? What makes this different than the prediction of flying cars?
Well, flying cars, you wind up with either a lousy airplane or a lousy automobile, but it's very hard to ever get flying cars right. And by the way, as I never tire of saying, and I remind my automotive friends of this, vehicle autonomy is actually easier to, full vehicle autonomy is easier to attain in the 3D space than it is on two-dimensional surfaces. If you have like an autonomous helicopter taxi service that connects the inner city to the airport and just shuttles back and forth, that from a technological and software and control standpoint to solve is far easier than doing it on a surface roadway. So yeah, there will be a lot of flying modules that operate in three-dimensional space, probably from ground level up to about 1,000 feet so that they don't interfere with regular air traffic and can stay outside the FAA system. So no, your comment was a very, very astute one. It will be both.
There are people that I think the vast majority of Americans can't get their arms around how different life will be by 2030, including their jobs.
Yeah.
Can you go into that at all?
Well, a friend of mine was with IBM, Advanced Systems Development Division, in the 60s, and they forecast that by the year 2000, and, you know, they were off in their timing, we would have a largely cybernated society with machines producing machines, machines designing machines, machines maintaining machines, and a lot of the wealth in the world being created basically fully automatically without human intervention. And what do we do then? And even IBM in the mid-60s postulated that what we were going to have to do is so much wealth is being produced by so little human input that we would evolve a system where people essentially get a guaranteed annual salary just to do nothing, which would enable them to open a little cobbler store or
right.
a local bakery or start making violins again.
So
all things that have disappeared. So I do believe that's going to happen.
Bob, talk to me a little bit about what has to change in the mindset of Americans. I mean, you know, Americans have always loved their car. It's personal to them.
Yep.
And we also, you know, we're a performance nation. I mean, you know, the new Dodge Demon, 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds, 850 horsepower. We like that stuff.
Oh, well, I like it too, but it's unfortunately increasingly incompatible with the prime reason we have cars. The others are just socio-psychological reasons. They're kind of side benefits of vehicle ownership. The primary purpose of cars, of course, is surface efficient, safe surface transportation. And sad to say, the automobile as we know it today is increasingly failing in those areas because we have so much congestion and because people, you know, they're not all enthusiastic drivers. A lot of them like to text, take drugs, drink, watch TV on their smartphones, or engage in other risky behavior that has nothing to do with the safe option.
So I can see us. I can see us regulate it out. You know that in 20 years you can't drive. You know, I don't believe my kids who are young. You know, 11 and 13 are going to be driving very long in their life. Just because of Uber, et cetera, but this is coming. We'll regulate it out. But what I can't get around is how the average American says, I don't want a car anymore, but I see that happening with millennials. But a bigger stumbling block is people like General Motors. You guys make a ton of your money on lending.
Yeah, well, that can continue, and there's nothing to be said that the automobile companies cannot lend to the big fleets like Uber and Lyft, just like GMAC does now. So, you know, I fully expect to see the smart car companies survive, but they'll just survive in a different form. And
who do you think survives and who doesn't survive?
Well, I would say the big companies that can produce efficiently and produce high quality at low cost, and it basically produce an unbranded product that'll be branded Lyft or Uber or Maven or whatever, they'll survive. It'll be tougher for the small specialty companies that have sold on image.
Give me an example, because when you're talking to General Motors, I don't know what you mean by a small company. So,
I think specialty manufacturers like Maserati, maybe even BMW or Mercedes, which are, you have to ask yourself, do those companies add any value in the basic transportation function, or do they sell because of a whole series of social beliefs and aura that's attached to the brand, an aura of superiority that's attached to German origin and so forth? Well, when all these things are branded Uber and Lyft and whatever, a brand isn't going to matter.
But there is a difference between getting into getting into a Dodge and getting into a Mercedes. It does, even if you strip it of all of its symbols, there is a difference in the quality of the vehicle. Is there not?
Well, maybe the materials are a little nicer and the seat fabric is a little nicer, but at the end of the day, in terms of performing the transportation function, that's basically the primal reason we have automobiles for it, is human, efficient, rapid, safe, human surface transportation in two dimensions. And, you know, in major urban areas, the automobile as we have it today, not so much the car, but the people that are operating it, and it's an integral part of the equation, increasingly failing in that task. And autonomous modules that are short, not driver-controlled, do not depend on human reaction, where the person in front of you at a traffic light takes 4 seconds to wake up that the light has turned green. None of that's going to happen anymore. And we'll save enormous amounts of productive time for the whole economy.
So you say that just like horses aren't used anymore, but rich people have racehorses, say that the Ferraris and et cetera, will be had by the uber rich. But
no.
Would that be used on a racetrack?
Well, no, but there are, first of all, I didn't say racehorses. I said you have to use the analogy of horses in general, so that there will be off-road dude ranches for 4x4s. There will be privately owned tracks where you can drive any car. Some of these might be public, like public golf courses, where you have to demonstrate that you can drive, and if you can drive, you can buy an hour or two on the track. So the car hobby will continue to exist. It's just not going to continue to exist on public roads. And these places are cropping up all over the United States already. There's one in Michigan and Pontiac called M1 Concours. There's one in Illinois, yeah. Autobahn, one in New York called Monticello, and so forth. And You basically buy, it's like a country club.
You pay
an initiation fee, and then you pay your dues membership, and you can actually leave your cars out there. And there will be manufacturers that continue to cater to that market. And the nice thing about those cars is they'll be totally regulation free. You can make them any way you want, because since they're not on the highways, the feds and the local states have no jurisdiction over them.
So, Bob, as I look into basically what IBM said would happen by the year 2000, they were off by probably about 30 years.
Yeah.
But we are moving in that direction. And as I see the rate of change that is coming, the best thing we can teach our children is that change is constant, and to not cement their thinking into anything, to always be looking for new things and experiencing new things. I don't know how to teach that, even.
No, it's not being taught. In fact, they're being, the liberal establishment is teaching exactly the opposite. I mean, every time some species happens to fade away out of the ocean or the rivers, it's considered a major tragedy, because these people behave like, okay, so the world is millions of years old, but now it's finished. And, you know, the world is never finished. It's in constant state of flux and mutation. And the same thing is true for society and technological progress. Now, I've been asked to describe automotive transportation 150 years from now. And you know what I tell them? I say, we won't even travel anymore. It'll all be virtual.
So, Bob, so what if you are somebody who is working in anything that involves an automobile now? What should you be working on? What should you be thinking? How can you prepare if that is your livelihood? And second, how can we prepare our kids? What should we be teaching our kids now to prepare them for a different America?
Well, I think you put it right. You've got to teach people that change is a constant, or other than death and taxes, the third thing that's for certain is change. And we have to make people comfortable with it. As far as if you're working in the automotive or automotive-related industry, keep your nose to the grindstone, learn as much as you can about autonomy, be prepared for change. But, you know, this is going to be a gradual transition. So most of the people working in the industry today will live out their careers in the automotive industry. It's not like it's all going to happen in 5 years. But as we were saying earlier, happen it will. And again, I think you said it right. When it comes to teaching our kids what's important, you have to teach them about the inevitability of change.
Bob Lutz, it is an honor to talk to you. And thank you so much for all of the work that you do with the Marines and our servicemen and women. We're appreciative to for what you've done.
Hey, thank you, Glenn. I'm surprised you know about my Marine Corps service.
Oh, yeah. We do our homework. So thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
God bless you. Bob Lutz, former vice chairman of General Motors and head of development at General Motors.
Glenn Beck,
The Blaze Radio Network.
There's a ton of things that I have to do this year. One of them, get organized, get into better shape, spend more time with family and friends. And to do it all, I have to be well rested. And that starts with getting a great night's sleep, which you're guaranteed to get every night when you sleep on a Casper mattress like I do. Casper is, I think, the perfect mattress, not only because it is really, really comfortable, it supports my back and everything else, but it is so wildly inexpensive when you A-B compare. Casper mattress, I'm not alone in loving it. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015. The mattress ships for free in a box so small you're going to be saying to yourself, how the heck do they get it in there? Get a Casper now. Start your year off right. Try yours in your home for 100 nights free with shipping and returns. Go to Casper.com/Glenn. That's $50 off the purchase of your mattress. You can do it right now. Casper.com/Glenn. $50 towards the purchase of your mattress, inexpensive, and a great night's sleep. Casper.com/Glenn. Terms and conditions apply.